This episode is brought to you by North Texas Honda Dealers. North Texas Honda Dealers, they're here to help.
He has time, launches it to the end zone. Touchdown, Terrence Williams!
The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught. He played. He's the one! Red Raider!
Bloody at the 10. What's he up the right sideline?
Yeah, he's got to go. He's tackled. Sam Houston wins it. The Bearcats capture their first FCS championship.
Hello and welcome to the Republic of Football. I'm your host, Ishmael Johnson, the assistant managing editor at Dave Campbell's Texas Football and TexasFootball.com. And also, I have to take a breath in between my own titles, the managing editor of Dave Campbell's Texas Basketball. I'm here in studio with Mike Craven, our college football insider and recent senior Twitter instigator, according to our Twitter graphics. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, starting fights.
Yeah.
Doing the thing I like to do best.
That's what we like to do. In other words, is what people, what some people are also saying is ruining the legacy of this magazine, which is what I've heard also on Twitter. So, you know, that's always a good thing to hear.
With quarterback rankings, you know what I mean?
Apparently.
People are so intense.
You know, hyperbole, whatever. Anyway, turning the dials, switching the knobs over there is everyone's favorite Mal pal, Mallory Hartley. How you doing?
Hey, good. How are you guys?
I'm good.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Oh, I can't hear myself. I'm just losing it.
I'm well.
Hey, what?
I said I'm well.
You're well?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hate when people ask me, how are you doing? And somebody says, and you're like, I'm good. And they're like, I'm well. You know, and you're like,
are you doing good?
Yeah.
It's
like, okay, guys.
I'm well.
Go to hell. Anyway. Anyway, how are you guys feeling about ruining the legacy of this magazine? It's going really great.
I'm surprised it took me 10 months.
With a grab.
I was going to say, according to everybody online, we shouldn't have jobs because we're just going down the drain. So
hard agree.
It kind of hurts.
You
know what? That's fair.
Maybe we shouldn't have jobs here. Who knows, honestly.
Anyway, so yeah.
The birds don't have jobs.
We will.
I've never seen a cricket with a job.
That's
right?
True.
Yeah.
They live great lives.
That's a good point.
They're fun. I mean, my dog doesn't have a job. Happiest
just
person I know.
Just gets fed and it's taking to the bathroom. He used to run outside.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Not bad.
Well, we will be talking about another one of those graphics that made social media upset on the back half of this show. But in the first half, we'll be discussing more headlines. Some A&M versus Texas. Craven had an interesting piece over the recruiting of Texas and A&M recently and kind of the opposite effects they're kind of or opposite successes they're kind of having, particularly with this 2023 cycle. And we'll talk about that here in a bit. And then we'll also talk with 247's Jeff Howe about the Longhorns. I believe he's going to be calling us more or less from Longhorn practice, more or about to head out to Longhorn practice. So we'll talk to him around 2:15. But before we do call him, I mentioned some headlines. And I think this week was kind of a good summary of Mike Craven's article, which you could go check out right now on TexasFootball.com. It is called Longhorns Aggies Gear Up on Opposite Sides with Rivalry Looming in the Foreground, which, of course, alludes to their eventual move to the SEC, Texas. Anyway, some news this week dropped that A&M picked up Denton Ryan linebacker Anthony Hill, 5-star, another coup for the Aggies, continuing their success from the 2022 class, 2023. And then Texas misses out on Colton Vasek from Westlake, a 4-star defensive end from, as I mentioned, from Westlake. He committed to Oklahoma, which continues kind of their slew of missing out on homegrown Austin products and defensive products in general. So, Craven, those two news drops this week. What's your takeaway? And kind of give us a hint of what you talk about in the article.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the Anthony Hill front, that's huge for Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he's the best linebacker I've seen in the state over the last 10, 12 years, at least over the last two decades going. I've been trying to think of, like, the last linebacker I can think of who was as dominant as him in high school. And the only person I could really think of was, like, Baron Browning. But then back to, like, Steve Edmund. How he dominated at smaller classifications. Anthony Hill's doing this at the highest level of high school football in the country, right? 6A football in the state of Texas. So a really good prospect, a really good get for Texas A&M, and one that hurts Texas. It was Texas and Texas A&M, right? Mm-hmm. We're back to kind of seeing those two-way battles on the recruiting front. They're going to have more and more emphasis on them as they're both in the same conference. They both start playing each other again. I think it's a bad sign for Pete Kwiatkowski. If we're going to look at this from the Texas side, right, you see this team that's recruiting juggernauts everywhere. Arch Manning, Quinn Ewers comes back, right? They get Jonte Cook. Like, they have all the momentum in the world. but not defensively. You know, they did it. I thought their 2022 class was really good at the defensive line,
Sure. Right?
But if you're trying to build this class, right, you're trying to get to what A&M was last year, at like the top class in the nation, you have to land a guy like Anthony Hill. I think it's an indictment on the Texas defense over the last few years, and that's probably unfair to blame Kwiatkowski for all of it because he's only been there for a year.
Sure.
But I think the way that the Texas offensive line has a reputation, the Texas defense has a reputation, mm-hmm. and it hasn't been good for a long time. So if you're a main star middle linebacker or you're a defensive end at Westlake, even though that's right down the road, why wouldn't you go play for Brent Venerables at Oklahoma? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you go play for a Texas A&M team that signed 6 5-star defenders over the last 2 cycles, right? Like, you want to go play with the best, and you want to go play for the best. Right now, if we're talking about Texas's defense, that's not true. Neither one of those is true, mm-hmm. right? And if you have those other options, you're going to take them, and that's bad news for Texas. That's something that they're going to have to fix, and I think the only way to do it is to play better on the field. Right. These guys, if Texas goes out and plays really well defensively, you know, maybe Colton's back in the mix. Right. Maybe you call up Anthony Hill again. And if those guys are gone, it helps you in the next cycle, and the next cycle, and the next cycle. Because I know this, Texas is going to score points. Mm-hmm. And the offensive players that they're recruiting, with Steve Sarkisian leading the way, Texas offense is going to be fine. Mm-hmm. But you cannot go to the SEC and be this bad of a defense.
Sure.
Right? They've been bad in the Big 12. They're getting bullied in the Big 12. What is going to happen when it's Alabama, Georgia, LSU, you know, Ole Miss, A&M? And so they're going to have to get the defensive recruiting to match the offensive recruiting before I'm, you know, sitting here and going, I think Texas is back.
Mm-hmm. I think this is – you mentioned Pete Kwiatkowski, and I am curious about his recruiting acumen at Washington, because I'm not familiar with it, right? I knew that Washington produced good defenses under him, so as a coach, I'm very much confident in what he's able to do. But I'm not familiar if they were able to snag a couple of guys from Oregon in recruiting battles and things like that. I don't know. Maybe somebody more familiar with that side of his resume can enlighten me on that. But also, the ones that I'm kind of looking at are Terry Joseph, Blake Gideon, Jeff Choate, right? Like, those are guys, like, those are the guys that I'm wondering, like, okay, why does nobody want to play for those guys, mm-hmm. right? Like, is there something else to their recruiting, right? Do they not have, are those guys not recruiting well, efficiently enough, right? Terry Joseph comes from Notre Dame, who never recruited poorly, but probably didn't reach certain heights that they should have as a recruiter, as we're seeing now that they are under Marcus Freeman. Is that something that, you know, kind of hinders him as maybe a program builder, as a position coach? I don't know. Because I believe he's a secondaries coach, Terry Joseph, I believe.
Yeah, corners.
And then Blake Gideon, of course, coaches safeties. So I don't know. I think Bo Davis obviously flashes his acumen as a recruiter, as you mentioned, with right. the defensive line.
Defensive line's been fun.
Defensive line's been good, and his resume speaks for itself as a recruiter and coach. So, like, I think that's fine. But I'm...
You miss out on O'Shawn Mathis.
That's the thing, too. You bring in Gary Patterson, and I don't know how much he's involved in recruiting, so I don't want to blame that. But, like, yeah, you have O'Shawn Mathis there on a table for you.
You lose out to Nebraska.
Right. You lose out on Drew Sanders, right, another Texas player who goes out of state.
There's just, like, no excuses for it. You can't
you
keep missing out.
You should be able to snag some guys here and there,
right,
especially when you're having such good success on the offensive end.
And I think another point is, this shows how NIL doesn't play this huge factor I think we all give it credit to, right?
Like, money's not an issue here.
Right, because, mm-hmm. like, for these 5-star guys, they're not making a one-year decision. This isn't like, where can I go get 20 grand next year and 20 grand the year after that? This is, who's going to set me up to be a multimillionaire in 4 years, right? And if you're a defensive player, just for the same reason, if you're a wide receiver, you're picking Texas. Mm-hmm. On the other side, if you're a defensive player and I have Oklahoma, A&M, and Texas, and when those are all in the SEC, that's going to be kind of the triangle, right? Mm-hmm. LSU, let's add LSU in there. If you have an offer from LSU, Texas, Oklahoma, and A&M, and you play middle linebacker, and your goal is to be a second, first-round pick in the NFL draft, you're going to A&M.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or you're going to Oklahoma, or you're going to LSU, until at Texas you see concrete evidence that you can go there, get developed, and get drafted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's why offensive linemen haven't been going there, right? Mm-hmm. Then you get Kyle Flood, and Kyle Flood can go, well, I put it in offensive lineman every single year at Alabama.
Or to
right?
your point,
so, like,
on Oklahoma.
There's evidence.
Yeah, to your point on Oklahoma, right? Oklahoma hasn't had a good defense, but Brent Venables comes
right.
in.
Right, Brent Venables.
You
want to
play for Brent Venables.
Uh-huh. Right, and so Texas doesn't have that. Like, yeah. Sark is the ultimate, like, he the show me on offense, right?
Offensive
you have
guy.
Sark.
Yes.
You know? But on defense, do you have something equal to that? I would imagine behind the scenes, Steve Sarkisian is looking at these recruiting classes and going, we're getting whoever we want offensively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're not close to getting whoever we want defensively. Mm-hmm. How do we get there? What do we do for that? Unfortunately for him, I think it's going to be an on-the-field deal. Until it's a chicken and egg thing.
Yep.
And I think at this point, if you're a defensive recruit, you're waiting to see Texas show you that they can do it before you just assume that they're going to.
Right.
And if they continue to go like this, unfortunately, it looks like that. It's at least for the immediate future of the SEC, they might be somebody like a Mississippi State or Miss, where they're like, they're exciting, right? And they'll catch some teams sleeping, but they just cannot stop anybody on that other end. This fall will be an indication, because obviously a lot of this roster is going to carry over to the SEC. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say like if 2024 maybe, or they close well with 2023 or 2024 is a good class, those guys aren't going to have an immediate impact on the SEC. So it's going to be this roster more or less the one that they're going to be taking. And as it's constructed, it's not ready to compete in the SEC, at least defensively. So let's switch around to A&M for a little bit, because they've had success here. And kind of hint at the article that Craven wrote. It's basically comparing both sides of the ball for each program, right? Texas is having success with running back, at wide receiver, at offensive line. Texas A&M, obviously they're not having a bad time on offense, but defensively they're really cashing in, especially last season, on what they were able to do on that side of the ball, despite losing Mike Elko, right? They lost their defensive coordinator. But I think the brand of A&M now is what it is. And so players like Ish Harris, Anthony Hill, Martrell Harris, Denver Harris, of course, there's another one, Deion Bowie, like those guys are all just like, yeah, let's go. Like, let's all go back and make another generation of the wrecking crew, basically carrying over what they did last season.
Yeah, and last year you see that defensive line class that they signed, and some of those big, Walter Nolan, Shamar Stewart, Labius Overton, right? And if you're playing middle linebacker, you're like, man, I get to play behind those guys, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like a quarterback looks at an offensive line, a middle linebacker looks at the defensive line, because those guys protect you,
yeah.
Right? If those guys are all taking up a couple blocks, Anthony Hill saying, I can go there and get 115, 130 tackles, mm-hmm. like right away, right? They're going to have to double team Walter Nolan. I'm going to be free. Texas doesn't have that yet. Now, they signed a tremendous 2022 class defensively, right? Especially on the defensive line. So maybe in a year or two, as those guys start to develop, linebackers across the state and across the country start to think that about the Texas, defensive line. But right now, I just don't think they do. And A&M, I think, has done an excellent job recruiting defense, making that priority, knowing the trenches are important. They already have one of the best secondaries in college football, maybe the best secondary in college football, definitely the best one in this state.
Mm-hmm.
If their front seven can match that, you're right. We're starting to talk about a real wrecking crew situation here, and that's how you win in the SEC. I look at A&M right now and think the 2023 season, they're going to be a top five program in this country, right? They're going to be an odds-on favorite to be one of those four teams in the college football playoff. It really is one of those positions where if they just figure out quarterback, that program feels kind of unstoppable right now. Like, they are running the state in a way that we haven't seen A&M do that in a while. They're just missing that linchpiece pin.
Sure.
They're just missing that linchpin at quarterback. And maybe it's on campus. Maybe that's Connor Wigman. Maybe that's Haynes King, right?
They just need reps,
Right. And we just haven't seen it yet. But it is amazing to watch what Jimbo's doing, and you see why they gave him kind of a carte blanche $10 million for the rest of your life contract, right? Mm-hmm. This is why you bring in a Jimbo Fisher, to put you in these conversations, to put you in position to go win at the highest level. I think A&M is geared up to do that now better than they have in my whole entire life, maybe since the 80s when I was a baby.
Right, basically. And this is going to gear up for the Lone Star Showdown to eventually be a clash of styles,
man.
It's going to be very fascinating to watch this future defense versus this future
Texas
offense.
You're signing up for like Devin Campbell versus Walter Nolan,
Stewart, yeah,
right? And then you got Jaden Blue running against Anthony Hill,
right?
And then you got Jonte Cook going out against routes against Denver Harris.
I was about to say,
those kind of matchups are lining up across the field, and you're like, everybody's excited about this game.
Sure,
but you start thinking about this offense versus defense, like, man, this is going to be like a show. It's going to be a real show. Yeah.
So I got a quick question before we move on. Are they going to be stuck in the same division, Texas A&M and Texas?
No, they haven't announced that yet.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't know.
Everything I read is they're thinking of like a 3-6 motto, right, where it's more pods. Like you face these three teams every single year, and then we mix up. I think it's getting too big for divisions. And I also think conferences are looking at it and going, well, why is the best team in the conference having to play the sixth best team in the conference depending on the year? Every year, the second best team can be different. Let's have a resume builder as a conference championship. I think divisions are kind of archaic and outdated, and we kind of see the 3-6 model move around, which I love. I think the 3-6 model is a genius idea.
That is, it's very interesting. I mean, I thought divisions were kind of need to be scrapped a while ago, so that's a good solution.
Yeah, because it gives your divisions. Fan base the consistency of rivalry, right? Mm-hmm. Texas will still have OU. Texas will, theory, still have A&M. Mm-hmm. Texas will probably have Arkansas, right? But then you also, every couple of years, you're going to get LSU, you're going to get Georgia, you're going to get Alabama, you're going to get Florida, right? And those are right. the games for Texas that they've been missing at home,
mm-hmm.
right? Like A&M's schedule the last couple of years, you look at 3 or 4 games, you're like, man, those are must-see. If you're a fan, you got to be there,
yeah.
right? Even if you're going to lose, you got to be there. You know, Texas doesn't have very good home games. The best team they play every single year, or the one the fans want to see, it happens in Dallas,
right?
Right. So there's not a lot of rivalry games in Austin. I think moving to the SEC helps that, and in theory, that'll help recruiting as well.
All right, so, hey, if you're watching this, you obviously know we're live, right? Whether it's YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook, TexasFootball.com, all that stuff. But starting in the fall, we will also be recording a Sunday episode. Not live, but be available on Apple, Spotify, all those things. Of course, if you're listening to us on those right now and you've been a loyal fan, you already know this, but just making everybody aware. Also, Texas Football Magazine, finally getting store shelves within the next couple weeks. But if you already have your magazine, or if you've wanted it for a while, consider this an incentive next year, or maybe right now for next year, to subscribe, because they've had it for a while. We've made sure the subscribers were the first to get it, despite the paper shortage. Subscribers were the first to get the magazine this year. So if you don't want to be left out, if anything happens in the future, be sure to subscribe. We'll take care of you. But yes, magazines are coming. Subscribe at TexasFootball.com. As I mentioned, that we will be talking to another guest who is live, or about to be live, from Texas football practice, a fellow Bobcat alum, so therefore one of the top 1% in this world. 247's very own Jeff Howe. Jeff, how are you doing, man?
Best introduction I've ever had for an interview in my life.
Let's go, baby. All right, Jeff, I'm going to start you off right away. We're going to get right into it. Is Steve Sarkisian going to name a starting quarterback, yes or no, before week one?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask today.
not today.
Yeah, no. I think he will. And kind of here's where my gut is on the quarterback situation. I think if he names it shortly after the first scrimmage, it's going to be Quinn Ewers. Like, I just think that there's enough within this offense. Yeah, they've got some offensive line issues, and I'm sure we'll touch on that. But I think when you look at how deep and talented they are at running back, the weapons they've got at wide receiver, a small yet really talented group of tight ends, I think there's enough to insulate the quarterback to where you don't really worry about Quinn Ewers' inexperience. You just feel like the arm talent is so good mm-hmm. that with a couple of these young receivers, with a couple of these young offensive linemen, if he can kind of grow with this offense as the year goes on, not to say that this would be a waste of year or anything, but you would feel outstanding about where you are heading into 2023. I think if it goes beyond the first scrimmage, or a couple of days beyond the first scrimmage, into that second scrimmage, I think that bodes really well for Hudson Card. I mean, everything I've heard, all signs have pointed to Quinn Ewers being the guy. Mm-hmm. But I think the longer this goes on, the better it is for Hudson Card. At least I think that should be the perception, because that'll mean he's playing his way into the job.
So this is Mike Craven here. So does that mean for you that you think this is kind of like Quinn Ewers' job to take? And if Hudson kind of emerges as the guy, that means just Quinn didn't kind of get to the level as fans, or as, you know, guys who watched him as high school, you know, prospect thinks that he would get to?
I think so, Mike. I think it's more of how much of the offense can Quinn digest. And the biggest thing I think that he has to get over, I don't think it's anything about pure talent, but one of, you know, like a lot of coaches, and I think this is really what made the decision last year to not go with Casey Thompson, go with Hudson Card. And one thing Sark really does not like is a quarterback that turns the football over, and that's careless with the football. And I think there were times he saw it a little bit in the spring game, but we heard about it from the close scrimmages. A guy trusting his arm. I mean, you got to remember, Quinn Ewers hasn't thrown a pass in a game situation. You want to count whatever scrimmages he got at Ohio State, but you're going back to his senior year at Southlake. So he didn't throw a pass last year in a game at Ohio State. So, I mean, spring ball, that was the first time he had really been, like, anything close to legitimate live reps. And I think trusting his arm a little bit more, and you don't anticipate speed and how quick the windows close and things like that. But that, to me, Mike, that's the big question with Quinn and Sark, is You know, Sark last year, he just kind of went with Hudson Carter. I think probably was maybe a little bit of a safer choice because he didn't like some of the turnovers Casey had in the scrimmages. Does Sark have, for lack of a better term, the stomach to put up with some of the turnovers, knowing that with the guy as talented as Quinn is, that the upside's going to be there?
You know, you kind of mentioned the offensive line a little bit here. You know, some really good players coming in, but that's always felt like a position where coaches are like, man, we can't expect an 18-year-old to come in from high school and play right away. You know, if we go to, like, midseason, right, like how many of those true freshmen do you think are legitimately in the rotation or maybe even in the starting lineup by then?
I think up to three or four. I mean, Cole Hudson got a jump on everybody because he was in town for spring practice. You know, Sark even said he's working a little bit of center. I mean, that's another thing with this Texas offensive line. I mean, if you want to start talking about the most valuable pieces, Mike, on this Texas team, Jake Majors is pretty high up there because I don't know what they would do for a backup center, knock on wood, if something happened to Jake Majors. I know Cole Hudson's working there. Kelvin Banks is going to play. Devon Campbell's going to play somewhere. And I know he's another guy that Sark and Kyle Flood both said has kind of started to work some center a little bit, just training him there to see if maybe in an emergency spot he could be a center or maybe down the line somewhere. I know the staff is also really excited about Cameron Williams. I mean, they love big people. They, you know, there's no wrong way to build a good offensive line, and that's kind of the way Sark wants to do it. You know, I asked him about this actually at coaching school because I don't think we've ever really asked him about, like, why do you want these big, massive human beings, whereas I think the previous staff at Texas, they kind of wanted to get more smaller guys and then see if you can build them up. And Sark talked about his time in the NFL when he was the OC in Atlanta, and I went back and verified it. He was right. The Falcons had the lightest offensive line in the league the 2 years he was there, and he said he just really got frustrated when they would go play, you know, the Ravens or the Steelers or teams with these big defensive fronts, the Eagles. And they would kind of get their head handed to him. And he said, he told himself, look, if I ever get a chance to do this again on my own, I'm not going to walk into a stadium and get bullied. And he feels like to do that, you need big people. And I think Cam Williams out of Duncanville is that kind of guy. So, I mean, I just named four right there, Mike, I think. And it wouldn't surprise me if all four of those guys, if a couple of those guys, you know, you typically in a Texas season, usually by that week after the Oklahoma game is usually when, if there are some leaks in the boat, you get them plugged up. It wouldn't surprise me at all if by that point a couple of those guys are starting or at least playing, you know, pretty significant high leverage snaps.
Yeah, I've heard Kyle Flood say before, like, there's weight classes for a reason. You know, like, big guys beat up little guys. So I totally get that. Before we transfer over the defensive side of the ball, like, Texas has struggled over the last 10 or so years, but they've always had really good running backs. Like, you've been around this program a lot. You've covered them for a long time. Like, where do you rank Bijan Robinson, or how do you classify Bijan Robinson in that upper echelon of running backs you've seen come through the 40?
Oh, that's a good one. You know, I said this, Mike, when he was coming out of high school. I thought the comp for him was and look, this is huge because I remember when this guy I'm going to mention was coming out of high school, and he was what I felt like was one of the best high school football players and still one of the best high school football players I've ever seen. I felt he was Cedric Benson, but with a little more juice. Like, when you just – I mean, Cedric Benson had some of the best feet for a running back and just natural running instincts I've ever seen. And Bijan's got some of that, but then you throw in the fact that – he probably, Xavier Worthy included, has the best hands on the team. And I think they're going to use him more in the passing game this year. All the tools he brings to the table. He's got the stop-start ability, the change of direction ability. And he does have the ability to thump you between the tackles because he can handle that kind of pounding. That would kind of be my comp, Mike. I mean, I know some people say there's the Jamal Charles thing. I don't know if people just automatically go there because of the dreads or whatever. But, you know, Jamal Charles, with all due respect to how fast Bijan is, Jamal Charles was world-class fast. But that's kind of how I've always thought of Bijan, and that's kind of how I see him. I think he's Cedric Benson with just a little more juice.
You remember those toys as a kid that were, like, bigger at the bottom, so you tackle them and they'd pop right back up because you couldn't get them off balance? That's what I think about with Bijan Robinson. Like, he has the best balance of any running back I've ever seen, I think, at the college level.
Yeah, the balance of the footwork, Mike, is just what does it for me. I mean, you never really – this is – I know this gets said a lot about quarterbacks. And I said this about Kyler Murray, you know, not to go too far off on a tangent, but people always say this, well, you know, Kyler, because of his size, he'll never hold up because of his size. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, if you watch Kyler Murray, even in Allen, even in his time in Oklahoma, like, Kyler Murray never really got hit hard. Mm-hmm. And when you watch Bijan, like, to your point, he never really gets hit hard. And when he does, it's really, really hard to get him on the ground. He's not a guy you're going to bring down with arm tackles. You're going to need to bring it, and there's going to have to be three, four, five hats on the ball to get him on the ground. But you never – you don't see his highlight reel or just watch game cutups and see where he just takes at times almost the unnecessary shots that some guys will take, almost like, hey, I've got to prove I'm tough. No, just be a smart runner. I think that's another underrated thing about him. I think Bijan's a really smart runner.
You know, we talked a lot about the offense. Everybody wants to talk about the offense because it's kind of the fun, sexy position. But, you know, I heard Pete Kwiatkowski kind of make a joke of, like, what pass rush the other day at a press conference. Where does that come from? Like, are there some guys on the roster that maybe fans and people like me who don't cover it day in, day out, like, we just don't know that guy yet, but he's going to emerge. Like, how do they kind of figure that out personnel-wise?
Can we keep just talking about the offense? It's fun to talk about with Texas. No, I mean, you know, you look at the numbers last year, Mike. I mean, Texas last year, 1.67 sacks per game. That's the worst per game sack total for a Texas defense since 1997. And anytime you're talking about that 97 defense, in terms of a record set since then, it's not anything good. You know, Ben Davis was your sack leader at 2.5. That's the lowest total for a Texas single-season sack leader since the school started recording them as an official statistic in 1975. And then, you know, not just the pass rush, Mike, but, I went back and looked at the numbers, kind of crunched some Pro Football Focus data. You realize on runs to the C-gap and out last year, Texas gave up almost 7 yards a carry. So on the edges, you couldn't affect the quarterback with any level of consistency. You couldn't stop the run with any level of consistency. And, you know, that's where, you know, missing on a guy like O'Shawn Mathis out of the transfer portal really hurts you. I think they're going to, you know, they're going to have to do some things schematically to shore up the edges. You know, in terms of personnel, I think you kind of got to money ball it a little bit and just try some different guys there. You know, DeMarvian Over, I know they're this staff, from everything we've heard, Mike, they really like Jalen Ford. I think he's going to be a really good player at inside linebacker, and he needs to be if they're going to move DeMarvian Overshown around and use him on the edge as much as they want to try to get a little more pass rush. You know, Justice Finkley, Jamon Tapp, Baron Sorrell, those are some of the young guys that you'll see play this year. But, you know, even the really good edge guys we've seen Texas churn out in the last 20 or so years, Alex Okafor, Jackson Jeffcoat, Sam Acho, those guys weren't playing, you know, 250, 300 snaps as true freshmen. They were kind of situational guys and good. I know depth at those various points has been very different than it is now. But, you know, you'll see those young guys play. How many snaps will they get, and do you trust them? I think, you know, you look at a guy like Alfred Collins, can you kick him out a little bit in some situations, and can he be a better run defender when he's out there? You know, a guy like Moro Ojimo can play multiple shades. So I just think they're going to have to take what they've got. I say all that to say this, Mike, there's no easy answer on how to fix Texas on the edges with stopping the run or getting out for the quarterback. They're just going to have to tweak some things schematically and take what they've got and figure out what are the best situations to use these guys, what's the right number of snaps for these guys. And quite frankly, I know Texas fans don't want to hear this, but I think at that point you just kind of have to hope that either something clicks for a guy like Alfred Collins, or that these young cats I just mentioned, that they're just that good and they can handle a heavy workload.
So we kind of mentioned those stats, right? The edge not being all that great. Anthony Hill commits to A&M. You know, a defensive end from Westlake right down the road commits to Oklahoma. How much of a leash does Pete Kwiatkowski have, especially with Gary Patterson kind of looming in the background? Is he there to help, or is he there to take over?
Yeah, he's here to help, but I think it was made pretty clear why he's here in the first place. You know, I don't think anybody in that coaching office, anybody with a dog in the fight, so to say, was happy with how things went on defense. I don't think that this is a situation like Texas got into in 2013 where, you know, Mac thought, going back to that year, you know, Mac thought long and hard after the 2012 season about firing Manny Diaz, and kind of, I think everybody knew, kind of brought in Greg Robinson as a break glass in case of emergency situation. I don't think it's that for a couple of reasons. I think one, I think Steve Sarkisian is going to give Pete Kwiatkowski the benefit of the doubt to try to fix it. I think in terms of understanding the personnel, the personnel adapting to the coaches and vice versa, I think there really is a sense that everybody is more on the same page this year than maybe they were last year. And by the way, too, You got to remember, Pete Kwiatkowski was hired after this defensive staff was already put together. So you're talking about this unique ecosystem of players trying to get to know coaches, coaches trying to get to know players. I mean, you had your DC, you know, last spring trying to get to know his assistant coaches and understand the personalities and the idiosyncrasies of guys he's working with. So I think it was just a work in progress last year defensively that never worked out. But I also think, too, like when you look at Gary Patterson, I just don't think – like he had plenty of opportunities to go get a Power 5 DC job if he wanted one. I just think this is kind of his way of staying close to the game but yet taking a step back, pardon the pun, from those responsibilities that he would have as a head coach. He doesn't have to recruit. You don't have to deal with, you know, boosters and donors and things like that. You know, you can just kind of be a film room junkie and get back to your roots as a coach of helping, you know, develop and mold football players and be involved in the evaluation process, which I know he's been a part of. So I just don't think I know Texas fans kind of want to look at that situation back in 2013 and think this is the same thing. I don't think this is the same thing, but trust me, Pete Kwiatkowski should have gotten the message, because I think it's pretty clear why Gary Patterson's here to make sure this defense isn't one of the worst in school history for the second year in a row.
And then last one for me, I really appreciate the time. If I set the over and under at 8 for this season, win total, which one are you headed towards, the over or the under?
I would slightly take the over. I mean, I think this is an 8-win team that has a chance to go get the 9 wins for the bowl game. I think with the schedule, that would be a good year. I'll tell you this, you know, I was looking at the road games Texas plays this year, like they're true road games. I know Oklahoma's a neutral site game, but you know, the road trips, like this could be the last time for a while, and who knows, maybe ever, that Texas goes out to Lubbock to play a football game. This could be the last year Texas goes to Stillwater, the last road trip to Manhattan. Those are going to be I would expect them to be pretty charged up environments. And you've got a head coach in Steve Sarkisian whose road record as a head coach is 13-31. So Sark in his career hasn't been great on the road. In Texas last year, you know, some of their worst games, Arkansas and Iowa State jump out. They were not good at all on the road last season. So I think that road schedule, if you know, kind of I've been trying to think about it, like the path to 8 wins, you know, you probably got to split those road games and then be at least 1-2 in that 3-game run of, you know, Alabama game 2, the Oklahoma game, and then finishing it off with Baylor, and then assuming you win your other games, that's your path to 8-4. I think with this schedule, with the issues they've got on defense, and with having to replace, you know, pretty much every major fulcrum, so to say, of their special teams. You know, I mean, Cameron Dicker's gone. They've got to replace a 4-year snapper in Justin Motter, and you're breaking in a new holder with Ryan Bishevsky leaving. You know, you take all those things into consideration. You can't lean on special teams the way you did last year. I think an 8-win regular season with everything that I just talked about, with a chance to get to 9 with a bowl game, I think that would be a really good year for this program, for this team, and kind of show that Sark has things, you know, trending in the right direction.
All right, sir. We really appreciate the time. Thank you for coming on and enjoy those 15 minutes of stretches that you get to watch there.
I'm all over it. I'm waiting in the parking lot with bated breath right now.
Keep that AC on. We appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks, guys.
There goes Jeff Howe with 247. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Howe 247. Like I said, 1% of this, he's part of the 1%.
I really thought you were going to, like, lead him into a Lane Hatcher question, you know? Like, just like, yeah, thanks for coming on. Texas State, over and under.
I know.
I do think his point about the schedule is a good one, right?
Like, I have not thought about that.
Texas doesn't leave the state until October 22nd.
Yeah,
that's wild to me.
The OU game's technically a road game this year. That happens in Dallas, sure. And they're at Tech.
Right.
Right? They only leave the state 3 times all year.
Yeah,
that's
Oklahoma
crazy.
State, October 22nd, at Kansas State, November 5th, at Kansas, big time game there, revenge tour, yeah. November 19th, right? So, like, they only leave the state 3 times.
I can't
Two
believe
of them
look,
is to Kansas.
I can't believe that's I'm looking so at Kansas' sad. Schedule to see who they have before to make sure it's not a
letdown. You need to look at it to see it after so they're not overlooking Texas, you know? Like, you know, oh, we got Oklahoma State next week.
Oh,
you know,
they
like,
got Kansas State the next week.
Oh, that's Whoa. A big time.
That's a rivalry
game.
Letdown look ahead.
You know, so it is kind of this convergence of two different things, right? They're a brand new football team. 35 of their
85 scholarship players are new, yep. right? Either transfers or incoming freshmen. We just heard Jeff say that he expects 3 to 4 true freshman offensive linemen. And I think he's right. I'm just laughing because, like, that's insane, right? That shows how bad you've been at recruiting offensive line and developing offensive line leading into this. But with that schedule, right, because, you know, that OU game, home versus away, what does it really do, right? Is this what color of jersey you wear? And then who gets to host recruits, right? But on the field, it's pretty much the same thing. The schedule lines up for this team to be really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
They just have to go do it. And we saw last year, they can play with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They just couldn't do it for four quarters.
Right.
Are they deeper? Are they more talented? Do they believe in what they're doing a little bit more? I wouldn't be surprised if Texas won 10 games. I wouldn't be surprised if Texas won 5 games.
Right.
And that's just where we're at with the Longhorns. And until that changes, that's, to me, you used to count. They were winning 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
They were winning 9 games.
You
know, like
count
a bad
on that,
season was 9 wins, right? It's like, man, what's happened in Texas? You know? Mm-hmm. And now it's like, man, I have no idea. I have no clue how good or how bad this team will be, because it's not about talent. If it was about talent, they wouldn't be having this dip for the last 13, 12 years or whatever it is. They're going to be talented. They're going to be talented, more talented than 10 out of the 12 teams on their schedule. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma and Alabama are the only ones. They're going to be more talented than Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
But can they beat those teams?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. So, as I hinted on in the first half of the show, we continue to ruin the legacy of this magazine, this company. On Twitter by ranking things around the state. Don't ask me. It's not my words. I'm quoting people. I'm quoting comments. I'm quoting Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff. So in the spirit of continuing to ruin the legacy of this magazine, we will discuss those graphics right now. First, for some reason, the one that didn't stir a lot of controversy.
I wonder why.
I don't know why. Mallory, could you throw this one up?
Absolutely.
Let's see. What can I figure out why this one did? Oh, look.
Oh,
Texas
and Texas A&M
are
at the top.
Number one
two.
And two. That's why, I think.
Yeah. The 5 out of the 6 top ones are P5 programs.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Like,
it's starting to make a little bit more sense why we didn't get a lot.
Nothing makes people more mad is when we rank a G5 school over any Power 5 school in the state.
So. I mean, I don't know. There's not much to discuss here because it kind of speaks for itself. If you don't think Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson are the best running back room in the state, obviously you throw in a Jadon Blue if you want. You do all that. Like, they're just – at that point, they're just flexing, right, as far as talent goes.
I think the discussion's at 3-4.
That's fair.
Yes.
Like, I think TCU's backfield is really good. You know, Tech has two guys that we know about.
I was about to say, I think that's why
Tech
is
more known. Yeah,
TCU's a little
bit more questionable.
Because Zach Evans leaves, and people are like, sky's falling. But you look at that running back room; it's
still pretty
good. It's good.
Still pretty good. Still pretty good. So, Craven, for you, for this one, besides 3 and 4, were there any others where you were like, this one's razor thin?
I didn't know where to put UTSA.
Sure.
I had no idea where to put UTSA, right? I mean, they got Traylon Smith, a transfer from Arkansas. Brady's back, who had kind of flirted with leaving the program, kind of being done with football. You know, Ty Edwards is a big-time recruit that they got there. I think they're talented.
Yeah.
But you lose Sincere McCormick, and what are you, right?
Right.
I mean, just not a lot of guys have gotten carries there for a couple years now. So I don't know. You know, I try to treat these lists on, like, production I'm sure about.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why Texas wasn't top ranked as the quarterback room. Like,
right.
Talent wise, Texas probably has the most talented quarterback room, but I haven't seen Quinn Ewers throw a ball since he was a junior in high school. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't put him there. Same with UTSA. It's like, I think that running back room's probably more talented than UTEP's.
Right.
You know? But I hadn't seen it. I've seen UTEP's running backs. And so that's kind of where we're at with the preseason polls.
Yep. All right. So let's get to the fun one, the one that caused
stirred
another
up
stir
lots of trouble.
Because we have. A lot of
I have some things to say.
We have a lot of front seven heads in our mentions. A lot of real recruitniks.
People who they think they know.
People, experts that comes when it comes to front seven.
Yeah.
People that are there with the ticker doing the 40 and the 40 and the,
of course.
And the shuttle times.
Well, why else would they be commenting that if they didn't have concrete evidence
the graphic that has single-handedly taken down this reputation of this magazine is the front seven. Mallory Hartley, can you throw up the Texas 12 rankings for the front seven? I'll just read this for the people.
Ooh,
listening.
Ooh, UTEP at two, man.
Baylor at number one.
Shoot,
UTEP at number
I don't
two,
know.
Houston at three, SMU 4, A&M 5, and it goes.
Texas at 7?
North Texas,
Mike Craven, what were you thinking?
UTSA, TCU, Texas Tech, Rice, Texas State at 12. Mike Craven, we've been publishing a magazine for 60-plus years. And never have I seen such an atrocity What are you thinking?
Are we going under, first of all? Can I ask that?
This will be our last show.
I would like to say, first off, that I've yet to have anybody who argues with these lists offer their own.
For sure.
No,
nobody's like, well, here's the way I would rank the 12. And yes. I'm gonna say this, and I'm going to say it with my chest, and I'm going to mean it, right?
Sure.
There's not another person in the state that knows more about all these 12 teams than I do.
Go for it.
Like, I go around the state talking to all of these coaches. Like, mm-hmm. It's my job to cover all 12 of these FBS programs. We don't just cover Texas. We don't just cover A&M, right? Like, we have to do all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all can't tell me four players on Rice's front seven. You can't tell me who four players on UTEP's front seven. Don't argue with me about stuff that you've never even heard. It's like when people are like, I really like this movie. Right. And they're like, it's not the best. You know, it's like, have you seen them all?
Right.
Like, you're not even reading the article before you're arguing with me. Right. These are pound for pound rankings.
I was about to say, we even put it on the graphic.
Floyd Mayweather, we could all agree, whether you like him or not, is the best pound for pound boxer of the last 20 years.
Yes.
That does not mean that he's beating up Vladimir Klitschko.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Like, there are weight classes for a reason. UTEP's defense is better in Conference USA than Texas's defense is in the Big 12. UTEP's front seven returns way more production than Texas A&M's front seven.
Mm-hmm.
It just does. That's just a true thing, right? And so all of these people and the mentions that are like, it's like, well, tell me one thing about UTEP. Like, what UTEP game did you watch? Because I went to two of them.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean? Like,
you've talked to Dana Dimmel multiple times.
Three times in this year. Like, it hadn't even been football yet, right? And I've been to El Paso once, and I've talked to him at two different events, at coaching school, at Conference USA Media Days, and for a trip to El Paso for the magazine put together.
Yes.
Right? There's not another person out there that knows more about these defenses and front sevens and the personnel. Like, there's just not. And so, like, I know that we've moved as a country to, like, expertise does not matter ever again, right, at all. But, like, maybe other people know more than you do. And, like, if I would like to know about being stupid, I will ask Twitter. And if you would like to know about front sevens in the state of Texas, you should ask me. And that's where we're at in this product exchange.
Yeah. No, so, I agree. Go ahead.
What I don't understand, so I think the number one upset that people pointed out was UTEP being at number two.
Right. Sure.
But I think people were also mad at Baylor being number one, which doesn't make much sense to me because that's kind of their identity.
They have the best defensive line in the
state. Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Dylan Doyle's a star.
I mean, that's their identity right now is their defense. And I guess
people see that they lost Terrell Bernard, right? And people are like, oh, well, they lost a star on defense, you know?
They got to get more.
They can't, you know, it's like, well, I mean, Dylan Doyle is really good. He was at Iowa. Iowa knows how to play defense. They don't know how to play offense, but they know how to play defense, right? Mm-hmm. Siaki Ika is the best defensive tackle in the country, probably. Anybody who doesn't believe me about UTEP, like, just needs to go look at UTEP's.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, they're really good.
We have questions about, you know, their wide receiving after they lose
their corners, their
consistency of quarterback, all that stuff.
Sure.
I don't have any questions about
their front seven is really good. Like, Breon Hayward's like the second most productive linebacker in the state behind KD Davis.
Sure.
You know, Praise is an excellent defensive end. Mm-hmm. Jadrian Taylor's incredible. Keegan Stewart at defensive tackle is awesome, right? Like, those are all guys, and they're all back, and they were all conference, right? Like, who's the all conference defensive lineman at Texas coming back?
Right.
Who's the all-conference defensive lineman at A&M coming back?
Right.
Like, I get that they all signed a bunch of five-star guys.
Sure.
But I've never seen them not play high school football.
Right.
And so, like, I'm just not going to sit. It's just not a talent ranking.
Right.
It's a pound-for-pound college football ranking. Like, you know what we do here.
Yep.
Like, this is who we are.
Yep. Right.
You know? And so, like, the idea of, like, us taking down Dave Campbell's or whatever, like, this is what we do at Dave Campbell's Texas football. Like,
we do this for you.
We're the place that covers all this.
I was about to say, this is the one place where you can, as a UTEP fan, say, yeah, guess what? We do got a better defensive line than Texas.
Right. Go find us.
Those UTEP fans are pretty happy, too.
You go find us a podcast that talks about G5 football as much as we do.
Sure.
Like, you're not going to find it.
No.
Like, and so I just wish people would be like, hey, I don't know anything about this. Can you just, like, rank them as P5 teams or G5 teams? Because I get that argument.
Or, like, just ask.
To explain.
Hey, why have UTEP second?
Because I should say this. I understand that if we put Texas's personnel at UTEP, they would go down as the best defense in the history of Conference USA.
Sure.
Right? We'd be writing about them like they were.
DeMarvin Overshown would, like, have a statue built of them.
Right. Exactly. I totally get that. I'm not arguing that Keyonjay Coburn wouldn't wreck Conference USA offensive lines. We're going to see Texas wreck UTSA. I get it. Yeah. Right? But that's not what these are. Mm-hmm. Like, the same way a heavyweight would beat a lightweight, I get that A&M would beat UTEP. Mm-hmm. But this is a pound for pound ranking that is not that. And like, that's okay. Like, that's an okay thing. That's not a, you need to bring up a passed away man's name, you know, to talk about. Like, that's a weird thing. Like, you're taking it way too seriously.
Seriously.
Maybe just touch grass, as the kids say, or something. You know, like, I just don't get it.
No, I agree. With that being said, we're not going to stop doing these. We're not going to log off. We will not log off. So
hey, one last thing too. I did see. I cannot remember his name. He's a Texas Tech. I believe he's a defensive player. He quoted our tweet and said, "Bet."
Oh yeah.
With the cactus, and I was
go
like, "That's what we want to see.
Go for it.
That is what we want to see. Prove us wrong. Yeah. You know, don't
great.
Go all up in arms about this list. You know, prove us wrong and tweet stuff like that because that's what I want
to
see.
I'm all here to be at the end of the season and be like, man.
We were wrong about Tech's defense.
Yes.
If I re-ranked that thing, I was an idiot.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
We're all for
– But, like,
what?
You can't pick
attached,
heads
– Because we're not attached to this. Like,
right.
Well, list.
And you can't – a coin flip can't happen. You go tails, it lands on tails and go, I knew it.
Right,
no, you didn't.
Yeah.
You guessed it.
Right.
Right? Like, those aren't – that's not – like, you need –
That's not
like,
how that works.
Like, there's, like, a whole class on knowledge that everybody needs to, like, learn, right. You know? And, like, I just don't. I understand that A&M's front seven has potential to be really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But until we see it, it's just potential.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's just, I don't know.
And we're putting another one
said,
on a Monday.
Like Craven said, touch grass. And we will bring you some more slop for that on that Twitter account. Yeah. So
wait till y'all see stadium experiences.
Oh, boy.
I'm looking forward to that one. So mute, yeah, there
I'm
you
just
go.
Gonna mute our Twitter comments. Our Facebook.
12th man, smelth
no,
man.
Do not mute anything. We don't run. We stand. We never log off. Anyway. So yeah, you little piggies will have your slop next week, and you'll eat it up. Anyway, that'll do it for us. Be sure to subscribe at on Spotify, subscribe on Apple for Apple Podcasts, all that stuff. Remember, we are live every Wednesday at 2 p.m.
Well,
what?
Until this podcast.
Oh.
I've enjoyed everything we've done here. I appreciate y'all's friendship. And if I never see y'all again, I'm back in Austin.
We're all getting fired. Sorry.
There you go. I was about to say, we probably don't have a job after that. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, we're here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Remember, during the season, we will be having recap episodes, not live, but we'll be putting them on Spotify and Apple Podcasts Sunday mornings, hopefully by noon, cross fingers, but somewhere roughly around that time when the season starts, because, of course, Mike will be on the road, I'll be on the road, Mallory will be on the road, things like that. So, until next week, for Mike, for Mallory, I'm Ishmael Johnson, and remember, we have had 11 of the 12 FBS head coaches on this podcast. Jimbo Fisher, please give us a call.
Good job to the state of Kansas.